Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham. Today, we're joined by Pedro Barbosa, who is a church leader in Lisbon, Portugal. He shares his experiences and the challenges of evangelicalism in a nominally Catholic and in many ways secular country. In our Sunday roundup, I give Graham some grief over his use of terms, and we're talking about the minimalists in our review section. So enjoy the podcast, and I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
My name is Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Well, as you will have heard in the intro, I sometimes get worried that I just repeat myself because I talk in the intro and then I talk a second in the intro now, but we've got a guest on today, but we've also got quite a lot to talk about in our review section and our Sunday roundup. So say hello. Hello, Graham. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you. Yeah, we're obviously in the middle of a lockdown of undetermined length, so there's all the frustrations of that, but lots to do.
And that's as much as I'm going to allow you to talk about that today, because I'm sick of it. And Mark, you doing all right?
I'm doing all right, thank you very much.
Good. See, that's how you should have answered, Graham. Take notes.
Yeah, sorry. And are you okay?
Yeah, I'm doing real well, thank you. I'm quite happy. So let's jump straight into our Sunday roundup.
Sunday roundup, short, get the sermon pass real slow. Did you plant some seed to grow? It's roundup time, what do you know?
So we started a new series on Sunday morning to do with race, culture and class. Might not have been in that order, I can't remember. Graham, give us an insight into why we're doing a series like that.
It's a biblical idea that there could, because of sin, be potential disharmony between tribes and nations and peoples. And so it's a biblical idea, but it's also a culturally very relevant idea. And it's kind of a massive gospel theme about the reuniting of peoples. So, yeah, for all those reasons, it's biblical, but it's also kind of culturally relevant. We introduced that. And then this past Sunday, we did the big idea of us being really what we have in common as human beings. Mm. One Father in Adam and one common nature of being made in the image of God. And we kind of developed that a bit during the talk.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's a really good thing, actually, to be responding to huge cultural themes in sermon series like this. I think that's a really helpful thing for people, especially in real life, ordinary life, where they're talking to people who are going to be focusing on these things that are going on in the world and in the media. So I think it's a great thing. Ahead of time, I warned Graham that I was going to take him to task on something that he said on Sunday morning, so he knows I'm about to do this. But Graham, I want to talk to you and ask you a question specifically about what I consider to be a conflation between two ideas, the two ideas being naturalism and evolution. I want to hear your thoughts on. I know that we've talked about evolution a little bit before, and you will talk about cultural baggage to do with evolution, and you carry that with you when you use that word. But as far as I see it, a lot of your sort of criticism, and especially on Sunday, to do with evolution that you were talking about, was to do with the fact that there is no grounding for objective morality, and that a philosophy like evolution leads to, or in some way supports, sort of slavery and things like that, because there is a hierarchy and there is no right or wrong in that. Now, I agree with you about those things, but I think that what you're really talking about when you're saying that is naturalism and not evolution. And my problem with that is that I think people end up leaving that sermon with a slightly distorted view about what evolution is and what it means and what sits behind it. And then they go out into the world with that. And what I think you're really criticizing is naturalistic evolution that has no space in it for supernatural intervention, and not just evolution as an idea by itself, because of course you can have theistic evolution. People like Bill Craig, John Lennox, all these different people who would subscribe to something like that, they talk about the mechanism of evolution, but they just have a different philosophy behind it. And so it seems to me like sometimes those two things in our church and in our world get squashed together, naturalism and evolution, and really they should be separated, and we should be a bit more subtle.
I think that's fair to say that perhaps it could have been slightly better qualified. But I think it's not quite as straightforward as the, over here there's this category of naturalism and over here there's this category of evolution. In that evolution, in most cases, and even to some degree theistic evolution, gives the potential for blurring the lines between the specialness of humans and the rest of the created order. But I accept that you could have made those distinctions. I don't think I actually said, by the way, that it was the sort of necessary cause of slavery and all those other things. I think I more turned it the other way up and said I don't think you can have a basis for equality outside of the Christian view of what it is to be human. So then I gave evolution as an example of where you couldn't have that and where you sort of created problems. That's slightly different way of saying it. And I think, say, Hitler, for example, or the guys I mentioned who put a pygmy gentleman from Africa in a cage. Mm. I don't think they were making some great distinction. They were just thinking the whole evolutionary philosophy and the kind of the way it all works together means there could well be different speeds of the way nations developed, different speeds in the evolutionary process. So they weren't really making some great distinction. But I accept, we could be a little bit more careful in use of words. But I don't think there are that many theistic evolutionists who are really talking much about it. I think people mostly out in the world that we're chatting with are actually naturalistic evolutionists. They're not theistic evolutionists. So
yeah,
and I think for those it is fair to say evolution's grown up a little bit in that it's not quite so much supporting all kind of different trees. There's the idea that we come from kind of one ancestor that branches off to apes and then branches off to humans, but still that potential for there to be differently developed creatures is still there, and it does undermine the whole project of saying we're all equal as human beings.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think,
but it's good to clarify, and I think words do matter. Yeah. And so when I did community group questions, I said evolutionary / naturalistic,
right?
just to kind of make the point that was what I was talking about more.
Yeah.
So it's helpful.
If you liked it, leave a review.
There's been a show on Netflix recently that we want to talk about in our review section today. I think it was called The Minimalists, and then it had a strap line. What was it?
The time is now, or now is the time. Yeah,
now is
like
the time. Minimalism is a movement that has, I suppose, been around for a while. I first became aware of it a couple of years ago when I was seeing other docs about it and bits of blogs about it. It's a simple idea in that minimalism is essentially about getting rid of the clutter. It's almost an anti-materialist perspective on the world, like that things and buying stuff and earning money so that you can buy bigger houses and more stuff is not going to sort of make you happy, and is not the answer to life's problems. And Graham and I both watched this. I think I have some thoughts on it. Graham, I'd like to know initially what your thoughts on this particular documentary that's been trending top 10, what they were when you watched it, because it was quite fascinating, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was well worth a watch. I think philosophically there was lots to think about, especially in the way it kind of evangelistically ends with almost an appeal to get rid of clutter. That sort of almost this emotional appeal at the end.
A call to action.
Your life's going to get better. Yeah. I think ultimately it's flawed in that it replaces one ideology and idolatry for another one. And I also think there's obviously bitter ironies through it in that they have beautiful houses that they're living in that are decluttered, but they're kind of decluttered in such an arty way.
Sure.
You think, wow, I'd love to live in this house. And then you're thinking, oh no, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. So I think it's a kind of very narrow form of decluttering.
Yeah.
Which doesn't involve giving away lots of money so much and still living in quite nice houses. But having said that, you could just dismiss it. But I think it's worth watching because I think it raises lots of interesting questions.
Yes. So I thought it was good, obviously. It's great to see like recognition so boldly stated that materialism is a dead end. It's great to see that, isn't it, in sort of the popular media, and that it answers nothing. And I think it's a good message even for me in that, and for the West generally, who sort of tend to hoard value possessions, buy stuff that we don't need. Like, it's a good message to hear that. And I thought it was remarkable, like, the structure of the program, like you said, it felt so religious to me.
Yeah.
Like it was the most testimony like thing I've ever watched. It was like a well produced testimony, and it was a powerful one as well, which I just thought was bizarre to see some of the parallels between what we hear in a church testimony and these two protagonists in the film who stand up and give their testimony about what adopting this philosophy had done in their lives. And it even ended with, like you said, that sort of specific call to action, like, so you should do this and this and this.
Yeah. And it's a biblical idea. Like, in the book of Proverbs, it says whoever has money never has money enough, or whoever has wealth never has, you know, however much you want more. And there's a great phrase, which is the ceiling becomes the floor, used in the documentary, where you get to there, and then you realize it's just the floor from which you want to find another ceiling.
Mm.
So I thought that's a very biblical idea about wealth not satisfying, like you said.
Yeah, and I think this, like, the sadness of it, I agree with you totally, is that it doesn't seem to understand that the problem, the solution they give to the problem is just as vacuous as the original problem, right? Like, minimalism is, although potentially better than materialism, arguably, still ultimately doesn't offer you any actual hope or any actual solution to the ultimate problem, which is that nothing means anything if we're all just going to die.
What does it offer me?
Well, do you think, well, it's a good question. Do you think that minimalism generally as a philosophy is better than materialism? That's a good question to ask.
Sure, in certain contexts, yeah, you know.
So I think
contentment with what you have
is a really biblical idea.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what, but sure, so I can be content, but a materialist might say they're content to a degree. They like having stuff, they're content with their stuff. A minimalist is presumably saying you don't want any of that stuff and be content with nothing.
Now, what they're saying is you shouldn't really have what you don't need and that doesn't kind of fulfill you. So it's a bit narrower than that. It's not really living a simple life entirely. But, I mean, the great example is, the kind of worked example is, a guy says, imagine your house, you pack all your boxes up as though you're moving, which he literally did, and then you only open the boxes of stuff that you actually want. So you put everything, furniture, any things you need. You know, and said that there were 90% of the boxes were left unopened because I only needed sort of 10% of what I packed up in boxes. But still, he's living in the big house, and you know, he's still, yeah. I mean, they got a home delivered pizza, which they probably ordered online while they were doing the process. So I thought that's kind of an irony as well, because they critique the kind of whole infrastructure of instant push button gratification, and they order a pizza delivery. You know, so there's great ironies in it. But yeah, I mean, to say that the American, particularly, they're talking about American culture, is going for more and more instant gratification. There's even little graphics about Amazon deliveries by,
drones.
Helicopter. Pardon? Drones is the word. I was going to say little helicopters. I knew it wasn't the right word. Drones. I'm such an old guy. Anyway, drones delivering stuff within sort of an hour of, you know, when you order it or something in some big cities. And saying, you know, that's the kind of more, and the way the advertising goes with it. Which was really helpful from a Christian point of view. So to say, okay, so they haven't got a philosophy, but I, as a Christian, need to think, even though intellectually I know that things don't satisfy, I, as a Christian, need to think, yeah, but am I acting as though they do? And am I accumulating or consuming as though they do? So I thought it was really good to kind of watch it and not just critique it, but also think, yeah, what about me?
What's that coming over the hill? Is it the main bit? Is it the main bit? Will we get copyright sued because of this jingle? This little jingle? What's that coming over the hill? It's Graham Nichols. It's Graham Nichols. Mark Fentham's coming as well.
So we have a very special guest with us today from Portugal, Pedro. But not Pedro Jr., our ministry trainee, who is in Portugal at the moment, but we have Pedro Sr., his father.
Otherwise known as Old Pedro.
Old Pedro and Young Pedro. Today we have Old Pedro, although I don't like to say that because he's younger than me, but he is older than his son, which is probably a good thing. So, all in all, we thought it'd be really good just to have a conversation with Pedro about especially with Pedro Jr. over here with us and him being an apprentice, and some of the things that some of us haven't had a chance to really get to chat with him, but we thought it'd be good to talk with his dad about what's going on in Portugal, about the church and the state of play over there. So welcome, Pedro.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm very glad to be with you, and also very glad to have now my kid here, my Pedro Jr. here with us. But thank you for what you are doing for him. Thank you very much.
Oh, we're loving having him over here. We're sad that he can't be with us now, but we're glad he is with you during this lockdown. Probably the best place. But we are loving having him. It's great to see him grow and his maturity, actually. So tell us a little bit about Portugal, size, culture, links, some interesting facts.
Yes, Portugal is a very beautiful country. A lot of sun, beautiful places, and wonderful food. So we have our population is about 11 million people living mostly in the coast. The main cities are Lisbon and Oporto. Porto is we was born in Porto. Me and my children. Graça is from Mirandela, is behind the hills, how we call that area. And so Portugal is a very Catholic country. The culture are very connected with the Catholic faith. And this is for us a great challenge to leave the Christian Bible Christian faith in here in Portugal. So we have a lot of beautiful things here, but we also suffer a lot when we want to leave our Bible believing faith and to be Christian here.
Just to understand, Pedro, the Catholic culture, was it? I don't really know the history of Portugal connected with Spain. Obviously, the whole area was kind of religious, and then you had the Muslim invasion, which was most of Spain, I think. When did Portugal get kind of separated off? And is it the same Catholicism that Spain mostly? Does that make sense as a question?
Yes, it's the same, very similar. Yeah, like Italy and Spain, we are very similar, yeah.
And part of the same history, kind of Catholicism.
Yes, the same. Yeah. Yes, it's very, very similar. Yeah, with the Spain Catholicism. Yeah, but the separation was in the end, in the beginning of the second millennium. Portugal independence was in 1149. So after that, some moments Spain had influenced in Portugal, trying to govern again and conquer again Portugal, a lot of strife and wars, but Portugal is independent since the beginning of the second millennium. Yeah.
And culturally, you'd think of yourself as definitely not Spanish.
No.
You definitely kind of
definitely,
very
yeah.
different culturally.
Yeah, yeah, very different.
Okay, that's really interesting.
In terms of out of the 11 million, how many would be Bible believing Christians? You know, how big's the church there, Pedro?
I was with some brothers some years ago from the Evangelical Alliance. They made a research here. So statistics from that research suggest that there are about 40. Almost 47,000 evangelical Christians in Portugal. Some people say that there are more, but when we speak of those who really are committed to the Bible, the number is very small. So one estimate says that Portuguese evangelicals represent 0.4% of the population.
Wow.
And the number of evangelical churches in Portugal has dropped In 2000, the number was 1,600. And the last number I've heard in Portugal, churches, evangelical churches, were less than 1,000. And the number is so decreasing, probably and mostly because there are some people from other countries. So one explanation is the number is falling because the return of believers of to their countries of origin, like Brazil or African Portuguese speaking countries. The great growth in the beginning of this century, because there was a growth, was when the Brazilian and some African people came to Portugal, so the churches had a growth. But now people are returning to their countries and the churches are diminishing, so the numbers are very few. The average number of members on, of an evangelical church is almost 50 people, is the average number of an evangelical church. In Lisbon, of course, there are churches with more than 100 people, but 200 people is almost a mega church in Portugal.
I think just to proportion it, I just trying to do a quick calculation in my head, but there's about a million or more evangelical Christians in the UK. Maybe, some people might argue 2 million, but so that order of magnitude, 1 or 2 million. And then even more who would identify as Christian, who may not be Catholic, there may be all kinds of things, but yeah. So you're probably talking like, would that be 5 to 10 times? Even if you proportion up for population, you're talking, quite a big multiple more in this country.
Can I ask about the Catholic population that there is there, Pedro? I assume that like much of Europe where there is sort of predominance of Catholicism, that it's a lot of it is nominal, that those people aren't heavily committed. But from what I know, I've done a little bit of work with some mission organizations, doing some work with EMF particularly. And what I hear from a lot of people is that there's a deep skepticism towards evangelicals, that they have... that they almost have strange beliefs about what evangelicals do and what they think, and that they're very wary of you. Is that the case in Portugal?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Some Brazilian movements came to Portugal, some from that movement of the prosperity gospel, and so the Portuguese, a normal Portuguese Catholic, they look to the evangelicals with that brand, like they are from that movement of the money and some business with, they want to have business with the faith. That's true. We feel that. There are a lot of desconfiança. The people is very... untrustworthy, yeah, that's the word. Yeah, the word. We feel that that's a lot. Yeah, people think the Portuguese people think that the evangelicals they want their money. Yeah.
Okay.
How did you become a Christian? How did you end up pastoring a church in Lisbon? If the numbers are so small, I mean, you're not from Lisbon. You say you're from Porto, so. Just tell us briefly, you know, how you ended up where you are and what your church is like. Give us a feel of.
Okay. My mother heard the gospel when she was a child, with 9 year old. British missionaries, they came to the north of Portugal and they support a mission. Ministry with children, APEC is for the children evangelization. I don't know the name of this mission in English, but they focus to tell Bible stories to children. My mother heard the gospel and she believed. So when I was born, my mother and my parents, they were committed to a church from the Brethren movement, and after to the Baptist churches, mainly from these churches were results from British efforts and also American and Brazilian missionaries that were sent to Portugal to start churches, plant churches. So when I was born, I was raised in a Bible believing home. So when I was a teenager, I wanted to help people with their struggles. I felt a lack of that when I was a teenager. I wanted to be pastored by someone, but our church was in trouble. So I decided to study and to help others. I thought psychology would be that way, but then I had contact with some books from John MacArthur, Our Sufficiency in Christ, and other kind of books. So I decided to study the Bible. I tried to go to the U.S., to New York, to study in the Word of Life Bible Institute there. But then I met Graça. She couldn't speak English, so we went to Brazil to study in the Word of Life seminary. So we spent 5 years there, and my conviction of being a Bible teacher was confirmed. And then we returned to Portugal. My daughter, my sister, died in Brazil. She came. She went there to visit us, and the Lord permitted that she passed away with was a surprise. She was 25 years old in that time. So with problems in our family, we decided to come to Portugal, to return to Portugal, and trying to engage with a church, a Portuguese church, was very hard for us. The churches in Brazil are very different, much more active. So we had was a hard time to return, but the conviction of serving the Lord and serving people, that conviction is leading us, leading me. I keep going and studying and preparing myself to be a better teacher, a better preacher, and also to give biblical counseling or biblical advices. So that's why we have support from churches in Brazil, and they want to help us to plant a church, a biblical church here. And that's our goal, and our vision is to plant this biblical church, and God willing, start new churches in Portugal, or help to start new churches in Portugal with this Bible vision, biblical vision of what is a church.
Because it's worth saying, isn't it, how we obviously got to know each other is through Neto, who is one of our mission partners in Brazil, and his work with Preach the Word. And you're very much involved with Preach the Word in there, and trying to establish kind of that Bible teaching, preaching across Portugal.
That's a good thing, isn't it, that he's Brazilian, but he's not prosperity gospel. So he's,
good old Neto.
He's a new wave of Brazilians who are actually Bible-based.
Yeah, but that's a very special ministry, and it was a joy, and it's very important to know Matto and people like him with the same mindset and with the same goal to train preachers to preach the Bible. So we want to help in everything. Next Wednesday, God willing, we'll have another meeting. It will be online meeting to to make the things going go here in Portugal with the training. We were waiting for the opportunity for the teachers to come and do the training in person, but so we decided that we will need to go online. But that's what we want, yes, to train people to preach the word and be faithful to the Bible when they teach.
How many do you have currently who you are training up?
I'm not sure because we start with 20 people last year in the beginning of the year. We're not sure how many will keep with us, will keep going, but our goal is to keep and maintain this number or increase it. But probably yes, 20 men. I think we can keep that number. Yeah.
Is it because there is not the kind of infrastructure or the kind of teaching in your own language that's encouraging expository Bible preaching? Is that why it's needed? Because obviously you've got these small number of evangelical churches. Presumably there's no Bible colleges or I don't know, other institutions, networks that are kind of doing that already. Is that why you need something kind of external that will give you a boost in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Portugal always were and are. Portugal is very dependent on human and financial resources that come from outside. Brazil, United States, England, always, this is the Portuguese story, history, always very dependent. And that's true, we don't have our own Bible seminary. There are some very small schools, but the problem is that we don't have enough teachers or people that we really can trust, or they are not a reference in preaching or teaching or pastoring. So that's why we always need we need that kind of reference from the outside. But I agree that that's a problem, yes. But that's our culture, the Catholicism, secularism. Yeah. The mind of to earn money and this humanistic thinking, also the sovereignty of our God. We know that the Lord not yet touched the Portuguese people like he already has done with the other people in other countries. That's what we are praying, that God raise and he identify, help us to identify, and he touched the Portuguese people to serve him. That's true, Graham, that we need more Portuguese people engage and compromise with the Bible and with the Lord. Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be a great thing to pray for, that yeah. As a consequence, maybe the second wave is that there's some self-supporting training that's happening in Portugal.
Just as we come to an end then, Pedro, give us some things to pray for, maybe kind of short-term with obviously COVID impact, but also maybe some longer terms, just two or three or four or five.
But before that, let me just share with you what we are doing right now. We are praying. We are having a week of prayer. I know that you had yours last week. Pedro told us but this is our week of prayer with the Evangelical Alliance suggestion of the material that they gave us. But the theme is the Bible engagement. We are praying for more Bible engagement. Also, what we are doing is expository preaching. We believe in preaching the word. So We just finished Romans, and now we started Deuteronomy. Most of the time I'm doing biblical counseling and discipling people, the pastoral ministry one-to-one with couples. Also with evangelism, some distribution, literature. We are distributing literature. We have a material, the Good News publishers. They is a German ministry. The main texts are based on the gospel, and to share the gospel. Some also training people to use some material like Word One-to-One. Pedro introduces us to that material. It's very good material. So we want to have that in Portuguese. We have already translated some of that material just for our church to use here with our church. And some material on biblical counseling. And we are looking for greater involvement with missions, looking for a missionary agency. We want to be involved also with missions in Africa. We have already contacted Guinea-Bissau. But we are suffering with these COVID numbers, and the government will decide today or tomorrow. I think it will be today the decision, but tomorrow probably will be locked down for 1 month. So we'll start that. So, but we are using the internet tools, and we are thankful to God for these tools. But you could pray for us, like the first Christians in Acts chapter 4. We just studied last Sunday the prayer movement, on the prayer issues that we learned with the first believers. And in Acts, they asked the Lord to enable them to speak His word with great boldness. So pray for us. We want that boldness. We feel many times like the Portuguese look at us like we are poor people. We are unintelligent. That's why we still believe the Bible. So, but we need that boldness to preach the word, to speak the word. Also, leadership training. We need to train leaders. There are some men with us already, some Portuguese men. They are few, but we want to train with Portuguese men. Is our preference. But also we have some African and Brazilian men with us, and we are struggling with financial resources because our main support are coming from Brazil. So there's a difference in the currency exchange in the last few months. The euro and the real, the currency, the difference is bigger now. And also we ask for health protection. Our houses are very precarious, so we need always to have our, this is the way that I need a good coat, a good blanket, some hot things in my hands and my feet, because the houses let in the cold, and the energy is very expensive. So we need health protection, that the Lord protect us. We are having some colds. Not COVID, but our winter is, we suffer a lot in winter here in Portugal because the houses are not prepared to this cold. So pray for us, boldness in speaking the word, leadership, training. We are identifying some men, and we want to, and we are training and doing better for that, and financial resources and health protection, please.
Thank you. We'll certainly be praying for that and for you. Thanks so much for coming on today with us, Pedro. Really appreciate it. Really good to see you, to hear of how the Lord is at work in Portugal. Hopefully it's encouraged those within our church family to pray for you, but to just give a little bit more of an insight of what you're doing and Pedro Jr.'s background, where he's come from. So thanks so much for joining with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Pedro.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, brothers. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. As always, do send your thoughts and questions into our email address, ordinary@cchh.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. Next week in our review section, we will be talking about another trending show on Netflix called Surviving Death. It's a fascinating series of docs on what happens when we die. We'll be focusing on episode 1, which is about near-death experiences, but I've actually watched and enjoyed the entire series, so maybe we'll talk about other episodes in the future. I say all this because we thought it might be good to give you ordinary listeners a chance to watch the show ahead of the ordinary episode, so that you can send in your questions or thoughts before we talk about it on the show. So that's all for today. Come back next week for another brand new episode of Ordinary.